This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on February 4, 2026 in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
In Philippians 4, we have a story of somebody that needed to receive some constructive criticism. And when I think about Paul, I think about a man that got up in the morning and he had passion when he went to work. And we heard something about showing up on time. If I think about Paul, I expect he was a man that showed up on time and he had a plan and he had a mission. And it was pretty clear. What I really like about this story is what I feel the love and the passion that Paul had for these two ladies. There's a lot of ladies here today, and first of all, I want to thank you for being here. You're an important part of our businesses, even if you don't work in the business. We need your counsel and we need your support. But here we see Paul talking to two ladies in the church that were passionate about what they had to do. But they had a struggle. And Paul talks about, "Dearly beloved, my joy and my crown." I feel the love and the compassion that he had for these people. And he says that they should stand fast. But then he says, "I beseech you, Euodias and Syntyche, that they be of the same mind in the Lord." So I'm thinking these were two ladies that had some challenges to work together. And then he talks about a true yoke fellow that he'd like to walk with them and help them work these issues out. But what I really like, and it gives me a lot of comfort, where there are people, there will be issues, there will be challenges. We heard a lot about that today. But what I really like at the very end of this is he talks to fellow laborers whose names are in the book of life. These people were people like you and I. They were wrestling with these things. They didn't always figure it out the first time. They had disagreements. But they were working it out. Their names were in the book of life. Our name can be in the book of life today. But we have to wrestle with these things. We have to work them out. Paul went on and he didn't just condemn them, he encouraged them. He said the verse in the middle here that says, "Rejoice in the Lord always." He was respectful, but he encouraged them. And I really like at verse 7 and 8 here, he talks about the peace of God that goes beyond all our understanding. That's something that God wants to give us, and we can all have that. I can't explain that to you, but we're allowed to have that. And we heard a lot about how we think about other people. And I like verse 8. He says, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report. If there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things." What do we occupy our mind with? We heard a lot about, we think about other people by the mistakes they make, the kind of the worst part of their life, and then we try to think about ourselves on the better things in our life. If we really focus on these good things, and we don't allow ourselves to go to the negative, it's much easier to think in the right way. I came across a quote that I think fits into some of the things we heard today. If we don't wrestle with these things, it can be in the church, it can be in our businesses, it can be in our families, wherever we are. And it says this: strong leaders, and if we're a leader, we must have some passion. Strong leaders in unresolved conflict create significant damage. If we don't deal with these things, like these two ladies in the church, they were in a leadership role that they would have had a lot of effect on the other younger ladies in church, I'm expecting. So if strong leaders in unresolved conflict create significant damage, we need to resolve it. So my topic is on constructive criticism, and the more I thought about that, I decided to cross that out and change it to mentor and train. If you are here today, you are probably leading someone in some way, but you are also reporting to someone. Even if we're the CEO or the owner, we report to the board or the banker. There's somebody watching over our shoulder that's going to hold us accountable. And ultimately, we all report to God. So I like that mentor and train better. So we will be talking about some of this and how we receive that. So first of all, who likes to be criticized? It doesn't make us feel good. But if somebody's mentoring and training us, that feels a lot better. Let's focus on building each other up versus pulling others down to my level. Our natural tendency is if somebody else is rising on the pedestal, we just heard about our ego, pull them down to my level. And in order to do this right, self must die. And Paul said, I die daily. So we need to do that on a daily basis. Only then can we have true love in our heart for a fellow man. Leonard Metter was our business advisor years ago, and he shared this with us one time in one of our planning sessions. Jesus was an example of empowering our replacement. Jesus identified his replacement. He taught the disciples. He mentored and trained them. And then he passed the baton on to them. Jesus trained Peter. He built Peter and he mentored Peter. When Jesus was here, they were his disciples and they were being taught. When he left, they were his apostles and they took the message out. Jesus' job was to lay the foundation. Peter's job was to take it further. You can go back to Moses and Joshua. As a leader, we need to be okay if others will take it further. That's the true definition of success. We heard something about protecting my job. What if I allow that leader behind me to grow and he can now do my job? What's going to happen with my role? We heard very plainly that there's other things to do. So let's be okay with that. Jesus told his disciples, greater works than these shall you do. Let's help our team develop so that they can take that to that next level. He wanted them to be greater than he was. He didn't fear that. He wanted that to happen. Great leaders are not intimidated by their successors. They want you to be greater. That takes maturity. We had an example in our neighborhood of an auction business. They were at a great location. They had a lot of land and they could have really expanded and had a thriving business. But it was very important to the owner that the leadership of that auction business stays in the family for 100 years. And it did. He just passed away a few weeks ago. And with him, that business will die. It's not a thriving business today because he did not train and mentor his replacement. There's another auction business, and most of you know about it, Mount Hope Auction. That's 10 miles south of there. They're not near as strategically located. They didn't have the market back in the 80s and 90s. They didn't have the opportunity that this other auction business did. Today, they are the hallmark of auction businesses because this other business did not mentor his replacement. It was more important that I keep the status that I maintain the ego, and it died with him. It actually almost died before that, but I don't think it will survive the next generation, and I don't see it happening. When I was preparing for this topic, I had a conversation with David Bowers, and he shared this story with me about a war horse. And it really got my attention. And it goes back to the Greek army. They would find the wildest horses in the mountains and bring them to be broken in. After months of training, they sorted the horses into different categories. Some were discarded, some broken and made useful for bearing burdens, some were useful for ordinary duty, and the fewest of all graduated as war horses. When a war horse passed the conditioning required for a war horse, its state was described as praus, the Greek word for meek. When we first think about a war horse and meekness, we don't think those two go together. But let's see what he says later. A war horse had power under authority and strength under control. A war horse never ceased to be determined, strong and passionate. However, it learned to bring its nature under discipline. It gave up being wild, unruly, out of control, and rebellious. Any leaders out here ever felt that way? Those inner beings want to come out, and we want to be in control. We want to make it happen, and that passion. We need that, but it needs to be controlled. A war horse learned to bring that nature under control. And I really want to hear you to listen to this last part, he says. It would now respond to the slightest touch of the rider. Stand in the face of cannon fire. Thunder into battle. Stop at a whisper. It was now truly meek. That challenges all of us as a leader. It's a process. We don't figure it out in one day. And even if we happen to get there one time, the next time we might not quite respond like we really wanted to, and we need to work on it again. So becoming a meek leader. Moses and Jesus were both described as a meek person. They were forceful and determined. We can see that in a numerous different areas, but they were obedient to God's commands. They were not a pushover. Becoming a meek leader. Let's be totally engaged, but under a control. I always like to remember the example of a duck. If you look at a duck swimming over a pond, everything looks smooth and unruffled on the surface. But underneath, there's a lot of furious paddling happening. That's how we need to respond as a leader. So how do we receive mentoring and training? Let's look at it as a stepping stone, not a failure. It's an opportunity to grow. And let's always learn from that process. and never get defensive. If somebody challenges us or criticizes us, let's be open. If we get defensive, we automatically shut down the opportunity to learn. We had a situation a couple years ago where we asked our VP of operations and our finishing team lead to do research on a powder coating system. We were going to spend over $1 million on a new piece of equipment. It was the most expensive investment we ever made in equipment. And they did their due diligence. They went out, they traveled to different places to look at systems and interview different companies that could do this. And they tried to make the best decision that they knew. We signed the contract. Almost a year after that, when things were not going as the contract said, we had close to $1 million spent on the project. The total was actually more like $1.5 million. And we had about $250,000 worth of product on the floor. We learned that the owner of the business had sold the business. And we weren't sure, are they going to file bankruptcy or what's going to happen? Needless to say, these two young men came under some scrutiny. How do we respond in the heat of the moment when we face that constructive criticism? We had a board that had some questions. We had a banker that had some questions. What's your plan here? These two men dug in. And they figured it out. We did a lot of things ourselves that we hadn't planned to do, that they didn't know how to do. But they asked questions. They talked to other suppliers in the market, and they learned things how to get through this. We know a lot more about our powder coating system today than we would if that contractor would have installed everything as the contract had said. We were blessed with many things throughout that, but it was a real challenge at the time. What I want to challenge all of you leaders, you are representing a company. You are representing Jesus Christ's kingdom. How do we respond with a company like this? They did not perform to their part of the bargain. Our team sometimes struggled. How do we respond to them? We need to be there to support each other, even if it costs us a lot of money, even if it's not happening what they had agreed to. There's still a right way to handle this. Do people feel safe to give me constructive criticism? Or, like we heard from Tim, is my ego so high that they don't dare bring it up? Do I ask for it and welcome it? It can come from our leader or a follower. It can happen on both ends of the spectrum if we're open. As a minister, our wife is our best critic. My wife has given me some tips, and she just reminded me today that yesterday when I was up here, I just held my hand up here. Those little things that nobody else is going to tell me. We need people that feel safe to tell us. And it doesn't feel like constructive criticism when we know that the person truly loves us. So as we work together and we give that criticism or mentoring, or we receive it both ways, it can be a flow of information that helps all of us grow together. As I was preparing for this, I was talking to my brother Eddie, leaded our operations for many years, and we made some changes this past year to where he's our VP of HR, and it was a pretty major shift for him. And I was concerned how this would affect him. He had to a number of people that were reporting to him that he now had to let go so that others could rise. And he did a good job in managing through that, in being intentional. He could have come back, and those people trusted him. Now they had to trust somebody else. And he could have, in some very subtle ways, come back and taken the leadership role for just a little bit from some of those other leaders. But he was intentional about stepping away and allowing them to work it out. If they needed support, he was available, but he didn't intervene unless he was asked. And in the process, I see a number of you younger leaders here today. In the process, we had a production manager that was 21 years old. And he was asked to step up to VP of operations role. And he's leading a lot of other people that are older than he is. Why do you think he was asked for that role? It wasn't my decision as a CEO. As I was talking to Eddie, he said he never had somebody that has asked him as often as this young man has for constructive feedback on how he's performing and how he can grow. So if you're reporting to somebody, don't think that if I ask where am I struggling or where am I not performing, that that's a weakness. That's a strength. And that's why this young man was chosen to be part of our executive team at 21 years of age. You have a lot of potential, and don't underestimate that. God has a plan for you, and if you simply come to work, you're meek. And you want to help wherever you can make the most difference, and you're available, the team's going to need you, and there's always going to be opportunity. Let's make sure that we have psychological safety on our team. A number of you are probably leading in a department or a certain area. But in August of 23, the PCB editorial had an article about psychological safety. And it went back to a Google research in 2012 where this quote came out, "The whole is greater than the sum of its parts." It really talked about Google had a question, and they spent millions of dollars on this research to identify why some teams really were successful and others struggled. And they looked at things like skill and IQ and all of these different things. And when they got all done and they came back, the big thing was psychological safety, where people were comfortable to ask for help because they do not fear their reputation being negatively impacted. Can your people come to you? If you have a meeting, can we talk about these things and share those ideas, and everybody is free to speak their mind? We heard a lot about that earlier today, about conflict. If we all think the same, we just have the echo chamber that Tyler talked about. We need people that speak their mind and bring different ideas to the table. If that happens, we will get a much better idea. And that's exactly what Google found in all that research. So that's free for us today. They spent millions of dollars finding it. It's working as a team, mutual sacrifice, laying aside self. It's not about me. The relationships are strong. Trust is high. There's connections beyond work. Do you really know your people? What are their challenges in life? Take time to take an interest. If people have a struggle, This morning we heard about being on time. It reminded me, one of our team members was recently having this one-on-one with his leader, and he was sharing he was struggling to always be on time. So his leader and him had a conversation, and he asked him, "What do you think would help you?" And together they came up with the solution that if he is late, he will report to his leader, and he will make a contribution to some charity every time he is late. He wants to do that anyhow, and it's a way of making him do it, and it's also a way of, there's actually a cost attached if I'm late. And our shop, if people are on time, we have a buzzer that goes off 5 minutes before, and I rather like to incentivize people compared to punish people, so we pay a $5 a day attendance bonus if you're on time. It's not that much, but over the course of a year, if somebody's 16 when they start working for us and they work with their father, that they can put that in a savings account, they can make a pretty good down payment by the time they're 21. But that communication is so important beyond just the work. We have this thing on our team that we started using called One Thing. It's a team building exercise, and it talks about, we did it on our leadership team first, but then just recently we started using it in some of our other teams. And first, we sit in a room, and we go around the room, and we tell each person a key strength. What strength does the individual have and utilize that brings special value to the team? We all have something. And we have this policy, you have to look the person in the eye and tell him, "Tim, I really appreciate this about you." And when you look someone in the eye and you force yourself to do that, you have a different feeling about that person than if you just look the other direction and make a matter-of-fact comment. But then we all have opportunities for improvement. So what is the one thing you wish this person, Tim, would stop doing or do differently so it would bring more value to the team? Sometimes we do something that is distracting. And I'll just take the thing that my wife told me, that if I just hold my hand here like it's paralyzed, it can be a distraction to my message. So there's little things like that that we all do, that if we don't share with each other, it's a hindrance to our growth, and it can be distracting and make us inefficient and ineffective as a team. So let's be open to each other. But that takes psychological safety, that we're comfortable to share those things. But it's been amazing what people share if it's safe. And if we're on that team, let's be open to each other, but let's also listen when the others talk, because they probably have something to tell us that is worth listening to. And we heard something this morning about if we get affirmation, it's okay to allow that dopamine hit to hit us, and it feels good to have affirmation that we're doing something right. And everybody has something good that they bring to the table. So that's okay, but then we also want to be open to what can we improve. This is just a list of how we put it together. I just shared that so you can make a copy if you want to. So let's be open and see this as an opportunity. People care enough about me that they will share where I can grow. We have a policy that when we're doing this, we can ask questions to clarify, but no defense. We can't defend it. And something to keep in mind, our weaknesses are often a strength overdone. Give that some thought. If we're really good at something, taking it too far often is no longer beneficial. So sometimes we just need to listen to that. In our business, we talk about reporting. I'm the CEO, so it's easy to think, well, I'm in charge and I can kind of decide how I want to do things. Well, Dave was talking about, I have 7 brothers, and a few of them are on our board, and I'm on the board as well. But as a board, we send out a sheet with some questions on it to rate our performance to our key leaders. So my executive team gets this list of a questionnaire to fill out on how I perform. So at the end of the year, we review that. So this year, we have a rating 1 to 5, and this year, I had a few ratings that were at a 3.5. So there's some opportunity for improvement. One of those was leading great and effective meetings. So that's an area that I need to improve on. I like to talk about ideas, and there's always more opportunities here, and it's easy to think, well, it's more important to get this discussed than it is to stay on time. Something that if we have a challenge somewhere, it's actually okay to delegate some of the things that I'm not good at. We heard about surrounding ourselves with people that are good at things that we're not. So let's make sure that we are open to that if that feedback comes back. It's not a contest. What if we get blamed for a mistake or a problem that was not our fault? Always be slow to speak and let's process it. If it is true, change. If not, learn from it. We don't have to defend it even if it wasn't us. And remember, God might have something else in mind. Back in 2023, we sold our business, our Pioneer equipment, our horse-drawn farm equipment business that we had for 40 years. It was who we were, it was our identity. But the market was changing and we knew something had to change. And we ended up selling that. It was still 20% of our revenue. And the following year, we were building a new brand, Flexter, which was welding tables, and we were coming off of a brand and a history where we were the largest in a very niche market, and we were going into a new market that nobody knew us and was much larger. And we really didn't have any idea what it would take to build a new brand in this new market. We were also building a new building, installing a new powder coating system that you heard about. And we were installing a new ERP system that same year. And we had conversations with each department on how do we lay this out and we plan it. And we had some great people that were leading these things and they all had a plan. The thing that I as the leader failed to do was I didn't ask the question, what if one of these things goes wrong? And we had 2 things that went wrong that year. One was the powder coating system was supposed to be ready to go by September of 23. And we didn't go live until January of 25, a year and a half later. We had planned to have revenue from the new brand that didn't happen. So revenue was down, we were spending a lot of time on the new ERP, the new building, the powder coating system. We had to build it ourselves because the contractor didn't. So we were busy. But the numbers didn't really look good. We had a banker that had some questions. I had some brothers that said, Daniel, what's your plan? And it didn't feel real good. They actually didn't really have an idea what it was really like. It was a time of my life that I'll never forget. I had a quote on my desk for a long, actually I still have it there today, from Psalms 3, verse 5 and 6. It says, "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not on thine own understanding." We heard some things about we can kind of get to the point where we think we can trust our gut and things work out. Well, in this case, I saw it wasn't going to work. And in the past, I depended too much on what I learned and my experience, and we can figure this out. Once we hit that roadblock, it reminds us. And I just encourage all of us, let's remember, our understanding is just very minute to what God really has in mind. We put a plan together. The Lord blessed us with some good orders at the end of the year, and things turned around. We were very blessed with the work that we had that year, that we could use our wet coating line. A year later, things would have been very different. So God understood the things that we didn't. And the last part of that, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. We can have that confidence that he will give us that. Talking a little bit about our young men that we have in our business, let's remember when we were there. Let's truly love them and care about their future, that we mentor them. They are often capable of a lot more than we give them credit for. We had a young man by the name of Matt that came to work for us a little over 10 years ago. He was young, he struggled in school, and he was fired from the job that he just had. And we decided to give him an opportunity. And he had some struggles. And a lot of times when he made a mistake, it was just mental fog, and he just couldn't remember things. And it got to the point where we had to send him home for 3 days. And we told him, "You can come back, but we want to know if you really want this job, because things have got to change." And that's what it took to get Matt's attention. When he came back, he pleaded with tears in his eyes, "Can I have this job? I'll do everything I can." And he was never going to be a leader. But he had a vision that he wanted to work in maintenance someday, and he wasn't ready for it. But I told him numerous times, and I had the opportunity to mentor him, and I give him a lot of credit because he worked a lot harder for his role than I ever did for mine. But it's been a blessing to see him grow in his life. He had a desire to start a special friendship. He was turned down numerous times. And just in this past few months, he was promoted internally to a maintenance assistant that has been his dream, and he started a friendship for the first time in his life. Those are some of the rewards that we can have if we walk with our people and we take an interest in them. And I share that not because I always get it done. I don't. I've missed so many opportunities. But it's worth it to walk with our people and help our young people on the journey. Treat and respect them like a man, not a boy. Even if they're 14 or 16, treat them like a man. Praise in public, mentor in private. Love them enough that you mentor them. True success is when they take it beyond what I ever would have. That takes intentionality, because we want to protect that. That's our nature. We recently had a maintenance man that had a number of things change in his life. He was ordained to the deacon role in the church. His wife's parents lived with them and took quite a bit of care. And he's one of those quiet men that he's the ideal person to be a deacon. He was leading this role, and because of some of the things that were happening, it required a lot of him. And he had planned to put in his resignation because he felt he couldn't perform to what it took. And I have to give my brother Eddie the credit here. He saw that coming, and he had the conversation with him about where is life really going. We were able to make some changes to where he's now our safety director. He doesn't have all that responsibility that was overwhelming to him. He's really good at what he does. And we just had his annual review the other week. And he was so concerned with some of the time he took off that he's doing his part of the job. Do you think any of us has any problem to pay him or any concern about the value he's bringing with that comment? I don't think so. We're glad to give him that time that he needs to take care of those things, because if he's concerned about that, he's going to do his due diligence. Delegate responsibility liberally. Give them more than we think they're ready for. Our plain people's way of doing it is an apprenticeship versus going to college. I'm not saying going to college is wrong. If I had a brain surgeon operating on my wife, I'd want him to have a college education. But there's a lot of things we can learn on the job. We just recently hired an engineering student out of college. And the little that I've seen so far, I think he's learned more operating a press brake and everything he's learning from that than he did in college. Give them clear expectations and get out of the way. They will surprise you. In closing, inspire others to love others from the bottom of their heart and truly feel it. Your people that you are leading will feel if you truly have that. Help them be overcomers. It can be personally, it can be in business. And remember, everyone you meet is fighting a battle you know nothing about. Be kind. I had a very personal experience a number of years ago that I'd just like to share in closing here. We hired a young man in 2016 that had worked in a corporate America business. He had a very rugged past that I didn't know much about at the time, but he had his own business. He got into financial struggles, and he left his family, and he was headed to the southern border to get away from it. One night, he was at a restaurant, and he saw a family in that restaurant sitting together doing what a normal family does. Because of what he saw, he decided that night to turn around and go home and receive constructive criticism and fix the path behind. Sometime after that, he came to work for us. Numerous times, we had to sit down and say, "Daniel, this is not how we do business as Christians." His name was also Daniel. And I still remember him thanking me with tears in his eyes. He said, "I don't want to, but that's how I was trained." He was in purchasing and he was aggressive. He got us some good deals, but he didn't always respond how we needed to respond. Time went on. One day they moved into our church district. He was on our school board. We were building a new school in 2018. May the 17th, my youngest brother married his daughter. He was involved in our youth program. The following day, Friday afternoon, I was wrapping up the day, and somebody burst into my office and said, "There's been a bad accident." We went out to the scene that afternoon, and he was taking a bench wagon home with a tractor, going down a hill, around a turn, and lost control. The tractor turned multiple times, killed him instantly. I'll never forget coming out to the scene, seeing my friend's feet, shoes sticking out from underneath the white sheet. I knew it was my friend because I knew those shoes. There were no goodbyes. The day before, we had a beautiful day. We had a day of joy. That evening, we got together as neighbors, as family, and we had a sorrow that we couldn't comprehend. But through all that journey, things changed. I saw the family, the legacy that he had left. His children continue. Today, some of his children work for us. And our VP of finance is his son, and I know the two of them sometimes had some struggles. But I know if Daniel would still be there, his son probably wouldn't be in the role that he is. So those things can be okay. We're okay today. What I want to share is today we heard about having the conversations today when we can. Let's have those critical conversations. Let's have those relationships so that we can have the hope that I have today for that man that went before us, and that I can meet him someday in eternity. And I wish that for all of you and your teammates. God bless you.